its achievement. If you would be freed from sin and sorrow, if you would taste of that spotless purity for which you sigh and pray, if you would realize wisdom and knowledge and would enter into the possession of profound and abiding peace, come now and enter the path of meditation, and let the supreme object of your meditation be truth. At the outset, meditation must be distinguished from idle reverie. There is nothing dreamy and unpractical about it. It is a process of searching and uncompromising thought, which allows nothing to remain but the simple and naked truth. Thus meditating, you will no longer strive to build yourself up in your prejudices, but, forgetting self, you will remember only that you are seeking the truth. And so you will remove, one by one, the errors which you have built around yourself in the past, and will patiently wait for the revelation of truth, which will come when your errors have been sufficiently removed. In the silent humility of your heart, you will realize that there is an inmost center in us all, where truth abides in fullness, and around, wall upon wall, the gross flesh hems it in. This perfect clear perception, which is truth, a baffling and perverting carnal mesh, blinds it and makes all error. And to know, rather, consists in opening out a way, whence the imprisoned splendor may escape, than in effecting entry for a light supposed to be without. Select some portion of the day in which to meditate, and keep that period sacred to your purpose. The best time is the very early morning, when the spirit of repose is upon everything. All natural conditions will then be in your favor. The passions after the long bodily fast of the night will be subdued. The excitements and worries of the previous day will have died away, and the mind, strong and yet restful, will be receptive to spiritual instruction. Indeed, one of the first efforts you will be called upon to make will be to shake off lethargy and indulgence, and if you refuse, you will be unable to advance, for the demands of the spirit are imperative. To be spiritually awakened is also to be mentally and physically awakened. The sluggard and the self-indulgent can have no knowledge of truth. He who, possessed of health and strength, wastes the calm, precious hours of the silent morning in drowsy indulgence, is totally unfit to climb the heavenly heights. He whose awakening consciousness has become alive to its lofty possibilities, who is beginning to shake off the darkness of ignorance in which the world is enveloped, rises before the stars have ceased their vigil, and grappling with the darkness within his soul, strives by holy aspiration to perceive the light of truth while the unawakened world dreams on. The heights by great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight, but they, while their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night. No saint, no holy man, no teacher of truth ever lived who did not rise early in the morning. Jesus habitually rose early and climbed the solitary mountains to engage in holy communion. Buddha always rose an hour before sunrise and engaged in meditation, and all his disciples were enjoined to do the same. If you have to commence your daily duties at a very early hour, and are thus debarred from giving the early morning to systematic meditation, try to give an hour at night, and should this, by the length and laboriousness of your daily task, be denied you, you need not despair, for you may turn your thoughts upward in holy meditation in the intervals of your work, or in those few idle minutes which you now waste in aimlessness. And should your work be of that kind which becomes by practice automatic, you may meditate while engaged upon it. That eminent Christian saint and philosopher, Jacob Boehmer, realized his vast knowledge of divine things whilst working long hours as a shoemaker. In every life there is time to think, and the busiest, the most laborious, is not shut out from aspiration and meditation. Spiritual meditation and self-discipline are inseparable. You will therefore commence to meditate upon yourself so as to try and understand yourself. For remember, the great object you will have in view will be the complete removal of all your errors in order that you may realize truth. You will begin to question your motives, thoughts, and acts, comparing them with your ideal and endeavoring to look upon them with a calm and impartial eye. In this manner, you will be continually gaining more of that mental and spiritual equilibrium without which men are but helpless straws upon the ocean of life. If you are given to hatred or anger, you will meditate upon gentleness and forgiveness, so as to become acutely alive to a sense of your harsh and foolish conduct. You will then begin to dwell in thoughts of love, of gentleness, of abounding forgiveness. And as you overcome the lower by the higher, there will gradually, silently steal into your heart a knowledge of the divine law of love, with an understanding of its bearing upon all the intricacies of life and conduct. And in applying this knowledge to your every thought, word, and act, you will grow more and more gentle, more and more loving, more and more divine. And thus, with every error, every selfish desire, every human weakness, by the power of meditation is it overcome. And as each sin, each error is thrust out, a fuller and clearer measure of the light of truth illumes the pilgrim soul. Thus meditating, you will be ceaselessly fortifying yourself against your only real enemy, your selfish, perishable self, and will be establishing yourself more and more firmly in the divine and imperishable self that is inseparable from truth. The direct outcome of your meditations will be a calm, spiritual strength, which will be your stay and resting place in the struggle of life. Great is the overcoming power of holy thought, and the strength and knowledge gained in the hour of silent meditation will enrich the soul with saving remembrance in the hour of strife, of sorrow, or of temptation. As by the power of meditation you grow in wisdom, you will relinquish more and more your selfish desires, which are fickle, impermanent, and productive of sorrow and pain, and will take your stand with increasing steadfastness and trust upon unchangeable principles, and will realize heavenly rest. The use of meditation is the acquirement of a knowledge of eternal principles, and the power which results from meditation is the ability to rest upon and trust those principles, and so become one with the eternal. The end of meditation is, therefore, direct knowledge of truth, God, and the realization of divine and profound peace. Let your meditations take their rise from the ethical ground which you now occupy. Remember that you are to grow into truth by steady perseverance. If you are an orthodox Christian, meditate ceaselessly upon the spotless purity and divine excellence of the character of Jesus, and apply his every precept to your inner life and outward conduct, so as to approximate more and more towards his perfection. Do not be as those religious ones who, refusing to meditate upon the law of truth and to put into practice the precepts given to them by their master, are content to formally worship, to cling to their particular creeds, and to continue in the ceaseless round of sin and suffering. Strive to rise, by the power of meditation, above all selfish clinging to partial gods or party creeds, above dead formalities and lifeless ignorance. Thus, walking the highway of wisdom, with mind fixed upon the spotless truth, you shall know no halting place short of the realization of truth. He who earnestly meditates first perceives a truth, as it were, afar off, and then realizes it by daily practice. It is only the doer of the word of truth that can know of the doctrine of truth, for though by pure thought the truth is perceived, it is only actualized by practice. Said the divine Gautama, the Buddha, "He who gives himself up to vanity and does not give himself up to meditation, forgetting the real aim of life and grasping at pleasure, will in time envy him who has exerted himself in meditation." And he instructed his disciples in the following five great meditations. The first meditation is the meditation of love, in which you so adjust your heart that you long for the weal and welfare of all beings, including the happiness of your enemies. The second meditation is the meditation of pity, in which you think of all beings in distress, vividly representing in your imagination their sorrows and anxieties, so as to arouse a deep compassion for them in your soul. The third meditation is the meditation of joy, in which you think of the prosperity of others and rejoice with their rejoicings. The fourth meditation is the meditation of impurity, in which you consider the evil consequences of corruption, the effects of sin and diseases, how trivial often the pleasure of the moment, and how fatal its consequences. The fifth meditation is the meditation on serenity, in which you rise above love and hate, tyranny and oppression, wealth and want, and regard your own fate with impartial calmness and perfect tranquility. By engaging in these meditations, the disciples of the Buddha arrived at a knowledge of the truth. But whether you engage in these particular meditations or not matters little, so long as your object is truth, so long as you hunger and thirst for that righteousness which is a holy heart and a blameless life. In your meditations, therefore, let your heart grow and expand with ever-broadening love, until, freed from all hatred and passion and condemnation, it embraces the whole universe with thoughtful tenderness. As the flower opens its petals to receive the morning light, so open your soul more and more to the glorious light of truth. Soar upward upon the wings of aspiration. Be fearless and believe in the loftiest possibilities. Believe that a life of absolute meekness is possible. Believe that a life of stainless purity is possible. Believe that a life of perfect holiness is possible. Believe that the realization of the highest truth is possible. He who so believes climbs rapidly the heavenly hills, whilst the unbelievers continue to grope darkly and painfully in the fog-bound valleys. So believing, so aspiring, so meditating, divinely sweet and beautiful will be your spiritual experiences, and glorious the revelations that will enrapture your inward vision. As you realize the divine love, the divine justice, the divine purity, the perfect law of good or of God, great will be your bliss and deep your peace. Old things will pass away, and all things will become new. The veil of the material universe, so dense and impenetrable to the eye of error, so thin and gauzy to the eye of truth, will be lifted, and the spiritual universe will be revealed. Time will cease, and you will live only in eternity. Change and mortality will no more cause you anxiety and sorrow, for you will become established in the unchangeable, and will dwell in the very heart of immortality. Star of Wisdom. Star, that of the birth of Vishnu, birth of Krishna, Buddha, Jesus, told the wise ones heavenward looking, waiting, watching for thy gleaming in the darkness of the night-time, in the starless gloom of midnight, shining herald of the coming of the kingdom of the righteous. Teller of the mystic story of the lowly birth of Godhead in the stable of the passions, in the manger of the mind-soul. Silent singer of the secret of compassion deep and holy, to the heart with sorrow burdened, to the soul with waiting weary. Star of all surpassing brightness, thou again dost deck the midnight. Thou again dost cheer the wise ones watching in the creedal darkness, weary of the endless battle with the grinding blades of error, tired of lifeless, useless idols, of the dead forms of religions, spent with watching for thy shining. Thou hast ended their despairing. Thou hast lighted up their pathway. Thou hast brought again the old truths to the heart of all thy watchers. To the souls of them that love thee, thou dost speak of joy and gladness, of the peace that comes of sorrow. Blessed are they that can see thee, weary wanderers in the night-time. Blessed they who feel the throbbing, in their bosoms feel the pulsing of a deep love stirred within them by the great power of thy shining. Let us learn thy lesson truly. Learn it faithfully and humbly. Learn it meekly, wisely, gladly. Ancient star of holy Vishnu, light of Krishna, Buddha, Jesus. 2. The two masters, self and truth. Upon the battlefield of the human soul, two masters are ever contending for the crown of supremacy, for the kingship and dominion of the heart. The master of self, called also the prince of this world, and the master of truth, called also the Father God. The master self is that rebellious one whose weapons are passion, pride, avarice, vanity, self-will, implements of darkness. The Master Truth is that meek and lowly one whose weapons are gentleness, patience, purity, sacrifice, humility, love, instruments of light. In every soul the battle is waged, and as a soldier cannot engage at once in two opposing armies, so every heart is enlisted either in the ranks of self or of truth. There is no half and half course. There is self, and there is truth. Where self is, truth is not. Where truth is, self is not. Thus spake Buddha, the teacher of truth, and Jesus, the manifested Christ, declared that no man can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. He cannot serve God and mammon. Truth is so simple, so absolutely undeviating and uncompromising, that it admits of no complexity, no turning, no qualification. Self is ingenious, crooked, and governed by subtle and snaky desire, admits of endless turnings and qualifications, and the deluded worshippers of self vainly imagine that they can gratify every worldly desire and at the same time possess the truth. But the lovers of truth worship truth with the sacrifice of self and ceaselessly guard themselves against worldliness and self-seeking. Do you seek to know and to realize truth? Then you must be prepared to sacrifice, to renounce to the uttermost, for truth in all its glory can only be perceived and known when the last vestige of self has disappeared. The eternal Christ declared that he who would be his disciple must deny himself daily. Are you willing to deny yourself, to give up your lusts, your prejudices, your opinions? If so, you may enter the narrow way of truth and find that peace from which the world is shut out. The absolute denial, the utter extinction of self, is the perfect state of truth, and all religions and philosophies are but so many aids to this supreme attainment. Self is the denial of truth. Truth is the denial of self. As you let self die, you will be reborn in truth. As you cling to self, truth will be hidden from you. Whilst you cling to self, your path will be beset with difficulties, and repeated pains, sorrows, and disappointments will be your lot. There are no difficulties in truth, and coming to truth, you will be freed from all sorrow and disappointment. Truth in itself is not hidden and dark. It is always revealed and is perfectly transparent. But the blind and wayward self cannot perceive it. The light of day is not hidden except to the blind, and the light of truth is not hidden except to those who are blinded by self. Truth is the one reality in the universe, the inward harmony, the perfect justice, the eternal love. Nothing can be added to it nor taken from it. It does not depend upon any man, but all men depend upon it. You cannot perceive the beauty of truth while you are looking out through the eyes of self. If you are vain, you will color everything with your own vanities. If lustful, your heart and mind will be so clouded with the smoke and flames of passion that everything will appear distorted through them. If proud and opinionative, you will see nothing in the whole universe except the magnitude and importance of your own opinions. There is one quality which preeminently distinguishes the man of truth from the man of self, and that is humility. To be not only free from vanity, stubbornness, and egotism, but to regard one's own opinions as of no value, this indeed is true humility. He who is immersed in self regards his own opinions as truth, and the opinions of other men as error. But that humble truth-lover who has learned to distinguish between opinion and truth regards all men with the eye of charity, and does not seek to defend his opinions against theirs, but sacrifices those opinions that he may love the more, that he may manifest the spirit of truth. For truth in its very nature is ineffable, and can only be lived. He who has most of charity has most of truth. Men engage in heated controversies, and foolishly imagine they are defending the truth, when in reality they are merely defending their own petty interests and perishable opinions. The follower of self takes up arms against others. The follower of truth takes up arms against himself. Truth, being unchangeable and eternal, is independent of your opinion and of mine. We may enter into it, or we may stay outside, but both our defense and our attack are superfluous and are hurled back upon ourselves. Men, enslaved by self, passionate, proud, and condemnatory, believe their particular creed or religion to be the truth, and all other religions to be error. And they proselytize with passionate ardor. There is but one religion, the religion of truth. There is but one error, the error of self. Truth is not a formal belief. It is an unselfish, holy, and aspiring heart, and he who has truth is at peace with all, and cherishes all with thoughts of love. You may easily know whether you are a child of truth or a worshipper of self, if you will silently examine your mind, heart, and conduct. Do you harbor thoughts of suspicion, enmity, envy, lust, pride, or do you strenuously fight against these? If the former, you are chained to self, no matter what religion you may profess. If the latter, you are a candidate for truth, even though outwardly you may profess no religion. Are you passionate, self-willed, ever seeking to gain your own ends, self-indulgent and self-centered? Or are you gentle, mild, unselfish, quit of every form of self-indulgence, and are ever ready to give up your own? If the former, self is your master. If the latter, truth is the object of your affection. Do you strive for riches? Do you fight with passion for your party? Do you lust for power and leadership? Are you given to ostentation and self-praise? Or have you given up the love of riches? Have you relinquished all strife? Are you content to take the lowest place and to be passed by unnoticed? And have you ceased to talk about yourself and to regard yourself with self-complacent pride? If the former, even though you may imagine you worship God, the God of your heart is self. If the latter, even though you may withhold your lips from worship, you are dwelling with the Most High. The signs by which the truth lover is known are unmistakable. Hear the holy Krishna declare them in Sir Edwin Arnold's beautiful rendering of the Bhagavad Gita. Fearlessness, singleness of soul, the will always to strive for wisdom, opened hand and governed appetites, and piety, and love of lonely study, humbleness, uprightness, heed to injure naught which lives, truthfulness, slowness unto wrath, a mind that lightly letteth go what others prize, an equanimity and charity which spieth no man's faults, and tenderness towards all that suffer, a contented heart, fluttered by no desires, a bearing mild, modest, and grave, with manhood nobly mixed, with patience, fortitude, and purity, an unrevengeful spirit never given to rate itself too high. Such be the signs, O Indian prince, of him whose feet are set on that fair path which leads to heavenly birth. When men, lost in the devious ways of error and self, have forgotten the heavenly birth, the state of holiness and truth, they set up artificial standards by which to judge one another and make acceptance of and adherence to their own particular theology, the test of truth. And so men are divided one against another, and there is ceaseless enmity and strife, and unending sorrow and suffering. Reader, do you seek to realize the birth into truth? There is only one way. Let self die. All those lusts, appetites, desires, opinions, limited conceptions and prejudices to which you have hitherto so tenaciously clung, let them fall from you. Let them no longer hold you in bondage, and truth will be yours. Cease to look upon your own religion as superior to all others, and strive humbly to learn the supreme lesson of charity. No longer cling to the idea so productive of strife and sorrow that the Saviour whom you worship is the only Saviour, and that the Saviour whom your brother worships with equal sincerity and ardour is an impostor. But seek diligently the path of holiness, and then you will realize that every holy man is a Saviour of mankind. The giving up of self is not merely the renunciation of outward things. It consists of the renunciation of the inward sin, the inward error, not by giving up vain clothing, not by relinquishing riches, not by abstaining from certain foods, not by speaking smooth words, not by merely doing these things is the truth found, but by giving up the spirit of vanity, by relinquishing the desire for riches, by abstaining from the lust of self-indulgence, by giving up all hatred, strife, condemnation, and self-seeking, and becoming gentle and pure at heart, by doing these things is the truth found. To do the former and not to do the latter is Pharisaism and hypocrisy, whereas the latter includes the former. You may renounce the outward world and isolate yourself in a cave or in the depths of a forest, but you will take all your selfishness with you, and unless you renounce that, great indeed will be your wretchedness and deep your delusion. You may remain just where you are, performing all your duties, and yet renounce the world, the inward enemy. To be in the world and yet not of the world is the highest perfection, the most blessed peace, is to achieve the greatest victory. The renunciation of self is the way of truth. Therefore, enter the path. There is no grief like hate, no pain like passion, no deceit like sense. Enter the path. Far hath he gone whose foot treads down one fond offence. As you succeed in overcoming self, you will begin to see things in their right relations. He who is swayed by any passion, prejudice, like or dislike, adjusts everything to that particular bias, and sees only his own delusions. He who is absolutely free from all passion, prejudice, preference, and partiality, sees himself as he is, sees others as they are, sees all things in their proper proportions and right relations. Having nothing to attack, nothing to defend, nothing to conceal, and no interests to guard, he is at peace. He has realized the profound simplicity of truth, for this unbiased, tranquil, blessed state of mind and heart is the state of truth. He who attains it dwells with the angels and sits at the footstool of the Supreme. Knowing the great law, knowing the origin of sorrow, knowing the secret of suffering, knowing the way of emancipation in truth, how can such a one engage in strife or condemnation? For though he knows that the blind, self-seeking world, surrounded with the clouds of its own illusions and enveloped in the darkness of error and self, cannot perceive the steadfast light of truth, and is utterly incapable of comprehending the profound simplicity of the heart that has died or is dying to self. Yet he also knows that when the suffering ages have piled up mountains of sorrow, the crushed and burdened soul of the world will fly to its final refuge, and that when the ages are completed, every prodigal will come back to the fold of truth. And so he dwells in goodwill toward all, and regards all with that tender compassion which a father bestows upon his wayward children. Men cannot understand truth because they cling to self, because they believe in and love self, because they believe self to be the only reality, whereas it is the one delusion. When you cease to believe in and love self, you will desert it and will fly to truth and will find the eternal reality. When men are intoxicated with the wines of luxury and pleasure and vanity, the thirst of life grows and deepens within them, and they delude themselves with dreams of fleshly immortality. But when they come to reap the harvest of their own sowing, and pain and sorrow supervene, then, crushed and humiliated, relinquishing self and all the intoxications of self, they come with aching hearts to the one immortality. The immortality that destroys all delusions, the spiritual immortality in truth. Men pass from evil to good, from self to truth, through the dark gate of sorrow, for sorrow and self are inseparable. Only in the peace and bliss of truth is all sorrow vanquished. If you suffer disappointment because your cherished plans have been thwarted, or because someone has not come up to your anticipations, it is because you are clinging to self. If you suffer remorse for your conduct, it is because you have given way to self. If you are overwhelmed with chagrin and regret because of the attitude of someone else toward you, it is because you have been cherishing self. If you are wounded on account of what has been done to you or said of you, it is because you are walking in the painful way of self. All suffering is of self. All suffering ends in truth. When you have entered into and realized truth, you will no longer suffer disappointment, remorse, and regret, and sorrow will flee from you. Self is the only prison that can ever bind the soul. Truth is the only angel that can bid the gates unroll. And when he comes to call thee, arise and follow fast. His way may lie through darkness, but it leads to light at last. The woe of the world is of its own making. Sorrow purifies and deepens the soul, and the extremity of sorrow is the prelude to truth. Have you suffered much? Have you sorrowed deeply? Have you pondered seriously upon the problem of life? If so, you are prepared to wage war against self and to become a disciple of truth. The intellectual who do not see the necessity for giving up self frame endless theories about the universe and call them truth. But do thou pursue that direct line of conduct which is the practice of righteousness, and thou wilt realize the truth which has no place in theory and which never changes? Cultivate your heart. Water it continually with unselfish love and deep-felt pity, and strive to shut out from it all thoughts and feelings which are not in accordance with love. Return good for evil, love for hatred, gentleness for ill-treatment, and remain silent when attacked. So shall you transmute all your selfish desires into the pure gold of love, and self will disappear in truth. So will you walk blamelessly among men, yoked with the easy yoke of lowliness, and clothed with the divine garment of humility. Regenerate the body, yes, each atom, small cell, and love it to divinity. Love your neighbor as your own self, etc. Your body is the neighbor to your real self, or to the real man. O come, weary brother, thy struggling and striving end thou in the heart of the Master of Truth. Across self's drear desert, why wilt thou be driving, athirst for the quickening waters of truth? When here, by the path of thy searching and sinning, flows life's gladsome stream, lies love's oasis green. Come, turn thou and rest, know the end and beginning, the sought and the searcher, the seer and seen. Thy master sits not in the unapproached mountains, nor dwells in the mirage which floats on the air, nor shalt thou discover his magical fountains in pathways of sand that encircle despair. In selfhood's dark desert, cease wearily seeking the odorous tracks of the feet of thy king. And if thou wouldst hear the sweet sound of his speaking, be deaf to all voices that emptily sing. Flee the vanishing places, renounce all thou hast, leave all that thou lovest, and, naked and bare, thyself at the shrine of the innermost cast. The highest, the holiest, the changeless is there. Within, in the heart of the silence, he dwelleth. Leave sorrow and sin, leave thy wandering sore. Come, bathe in his joy, whilst he, whispering, telleth thy soul what it seeketh, and wander no more. Then cease, weary brother, thy struggling and striving. Find peace in the heart of the Master of Truth. Across self's dark desert, cease wearily driving. Come, drink at the beautiful waters of truth. 3. The acquirement of spiritual power. The world is filled with men and women seeking pleasure, excitement, novelty, seeking ever to be moved to laughter or tears, not seeking strength, stability, and power, but courting weakness and eagerly engaged in dispersing what power they have. Men and women of real power and influence are few, because few are prepared to make the sacrifice necessary to the acquirement of power. And fewer still are ready to patiently build up character. To be swayed by your fluctuating thoughts and impulses is to be weak and powerless. To rightly control and direct those forces is to be strong and powerful. Men of strong animal passions have much of the ferocity of the beast, but this is not power. The elements of power are there. But it is only when this ferocity is tamed and subdued by the higher intelligence that real power begins, and men can only grow in power by awakening themselves to higher and ever higher states of intelligence and consciousness. The difference between a man of weakness and one of power lies not in the strength of the personal will, for the stubborn man is usually weak and foolish, but in that focus of consciousness which represents their states of knowledge. The pleasure-seekers, the lovers of excitement, the hunters after novelty, and the victims of impulse and hysterical emotion lack that knowledge of principles which gives balance, stability, and influence. A man commences to develop power when, checking his impulses and selfish inclinations, he falls back upon the higher and calmer consciousness within him and begins to steady himself upon a principle. The realization of unchanging principles in consciousness is at once the source and the secret of the highest power. When, after much searching and suffering and sacrificing, the light of an eternal principle dawns upon the soul, a divine calm ensues, and joy unspeakable gladdens the heart. He who has realized such a principle ceases to wander and remains poised and self-possessed. He ceases to be passion's slave and becomes a master builder in the temple of destiny. The man that is governed by self and not by a principle changes his front when his selfish comforts are threatened. Deeply intent upon defending and guarding his own interests, he regards all means as lawful that will subserve that end. He is continually scheming as to how he may protect himself against his enemies, being too self-centered to perceive that he is his own enemy. Such a man's work crumbles away, for it is divorced from truth and power. All effort that is grounded upon self perishes. Only that work endures that is built upon an indestructible principle. The man that stands upon a principle is the same calm, dauntless, self-possessed man under all circumstances. When the hour of trial comes and he has to decide between his personal comforts and truth, he gives up his comforts and remains firm. Even the prospect of torture and death cannot alter or deter him. The man of self regards the loss of his wealth, his comforts, or his life as the greatest calamities which can befall him. The man of principle looks upon these incidents as comparatively insignificant and not to be weighed with loss of character, loss of truth. To desert truth is to him the only happening which can really be called a calamity. It is the hour of crisis which decides who are the minions of darkness and who the children of light. It is the epoch of threatening disaster, ruin, and persecution which divides the sheep from the goats and reveals to the reverential gaze of succeeding ages the men and women of power. It is easy for a man, so long as he is left in the enjoyment of his possessions, to persuade himself that he believes in and adheres to the principles of peace, brotherhood, and universal love. But if, when his enjoyments are threatened, or he imagines they are threatened, he begins to clamor loudly for war, he shows that he believes in and stands upon not peace, brotherhood, and life, but strife, selfishness, and hatred. He who does not desert his principles when threatened with the loss of every earthly thing, even to the loss of reputation and life, is the man of power, is the man whose every word and work endures, is the man whom the afterworld honors, reveres, and worships. Rather than desert that principle of divine love on which he rested and in which all his trust was placed, Jesus endured the utmost extremity of agony and deprivation. And today, the world prostrates itself at his pierced feet in rapt adoration. There is no way to the acquirement of spiritual power except by that inward illumination and enlightenment which is the realization of spiritual principles, and those principles can only be realized by constant practice and application. Take the principle of divine love, and quietly and diligently meditate upon it with the object of arriving at a thorough understanding of it. Bring its searching light to bear upon all your habits, your actions, your speech and intercourse with others, your every secret thought and desire. As you persevere in this course, the divine love will become more and more perfectly revealed to you, and your own shortcomings will stand out in more and more vivid contrast spurring you on to renewed endeavour. And having once caught a glimpse of the incomparable majesty of that imperishable principle, you will never again rest in your weakness, your selfishness, your imperfection, but will pursue that love until you have relinquished every discordant element and have brought yourself into perfect harmony with it. And that state of inward harmony is spiritual power. Take also other spiritual principles, such as purity and compassion, and apply them in the same way. And so exacting is truth, you will be able to make no stay, no resting place, until the inmost garment of your soul is bereft of every stain, and your heart has become incapable of any hard, condemnatory, and pitiless impulse. Only in so far as you understand, realize, and rely upon these principles will you acquire spiritual power, and that power will be manifested in and through you in the form of increasing dispassion, patience, and equanimity. Dispassion argues superior self-control. Sublime patience is the very hallmark of divine knowledge, and to retain an unbroken calm amid all the duties and distractions of life marks off the man of power. It is easy in the world to live after the world's opinion. It is easy in solitude to live after our own. But the great man is he who in the midst of the crowd keeps with perfect sweetness the independence of solitude. Some mystics hold that perfection in dispassion is the source of that power by which miracles, so-called, are performed. And truly, he who has gained such perfect control of all his interior forces that no shock, however great, can for one moment unbalance him, must be capable of guiding and directing those forces with a master hand. To grow in self-control, in patience, in equanimity, is to grow in strength and power, and you can only thus grow by focusing your consciousness upon a principle. As a child, after making many and vigorous attempts to walk unaided, at last succeeds, after numerous falls, in accomplishing this, so you must enter the way of power by first attempting to stand alone. Break away from the tyranny of custom, tradition, conventionality, and the opinions of others, until you succeed in walking lonely and erect among men. Rely upon your own judgment. Be true to your own conscience. Follow the light that is within you. All outward lights are so many will-o'-the-wisps. There will be those who would tell you that you are foolish, that your judgment is faulty, that your conscience is all awry, and that the light within you is darkness. But heed them not. If what they say is true, the sooner you, as a searcher for wisdom, find it out the better, and you can only make the discovery by bringing your powers to the test. Therefore, pursue your course bravely. Your conscience is at least your own, and to follow it is to be a man. To follow the conscience of another is to be a slave. You will have many falls, will suffer many wounds, will endure many buffetings for a time, but press on in faith, believing that sure and certain victory lies ahead. Search for a rock, a principle, and having found it, cling to it. Get it under your feet, and stand erect upon it, until at last, immovably fixed upon it, you succeed in defying the fury of the waves and storms of selfishness. For selfishness in any and every form is dissipation, weakness, death. Unselfishness in its spiritual aspect is conservation, power, life. As you grow in spiritual life and become established upon principles, you will become as beautiful and as unchangeable as those principles, will taste of the sweetness of their immortal essence, and will realize the eternal and indestructible nature of the God within. No harmful shaft can reach the righteous man, standing erect amid the storms of hate, defying hurt and injury and ban, surrounded by the trembling slaves of fate. Majestic in the strength of silent power, serene he stands, nor changes not nor turns. Patient and firm in suffering's darkest hour, time bends to him, and death and doom he spurns. Wrath's lurid lightnings round about him play, and hell's deep thunders roll about his head. Yet heeds he not, for him they cannot slay, who stands whence earth and time and space are fled. Sheltered by deathless love, what fear hath he? Armored in changeless truth, what can he know of loss and gain? Knowing eternity, he moves not whilst the shadows come and go. Call him a mortal, call him truth and light, and splendour of prophetic majesty, who biddeth thus amid the powers of night, clothed with the glory of divinity. 4. The realization of selfless love. It is said that Michelangelo saw in every rough block of stone a thing of beauty awaiting the master hand to bring it into reality. Even so, within each there reposes the divine image awaiting the master hand of faith and the chisel of patience to bring it into manifestation. And that divine image is revealed and realized as stainless, selfless love. Hidden deep in every human heart, though frequently covered up with a mass of hard and almost impenetrable accretions, is the spirit of divine love, whose holy and spotless essence is undying and eternal. It is the truth in man. It is that which belongs to the supreme, that which is real and immortal. All else changes and passes away. This alone is permanent and imperishable. And to realize this love by ceaseless diligence in the practice of the highest righteousness, to live in it and to become fully conscious in it, is to enter into immortality here and now, is to become one with truth, one with God, one with the central heart of all things, and to know our own divine and eternal nature. To reach this love, to understand and experience it, one must work with great persistency and diligence upon his heart and mind, must ever renew his patience and keep strong his faith, for there will be much to remove, much to accomplish before the divine image is revealed in all its glorious beauty. He who strives to reach and to accomplish the divine will be tried to the very uttermost. And this is absolutely necessary, for how else could one acquire that sublime patience without which there is no real wisdom, no divinity? Ever and anon, as he proceeds, all his work will seem to be futile, and his efforts appear to be thrown away. Now and then a hasty touch will mar his image, and perhaps when he imagines his work is almost completed, he will find what he imagined to be the beautiful form of divine love utterly destroyed, and he must begin again with his past bitter experience to guide and help him. But he who has resolutely set himself to realize the highest recognizes no such thing as defeat. All failures are apparent, not real. Every slip, every fall, every return to selfishness is a lesson learned, an experience gained, from which a golden grain of wisdom is extracted, helping the striver toward the accomplishment of his lofty object. To recognize that of our vices we can frame a ladder if we will but tread beneath our feet each deed of shame, is to enter the way that leads unmistakably toward the divine, and the failings of one who thus recognizes are so many dead selves, upon which he rises as upon stepping stones to higher things. Once come to regard your failings, your sorrows and sufferings, as so many voices telling you plainly where you are weak and faulty, where you fall below the true and the divine, you will then begin to ceaselessly watch yourself, and every slip, every pang of pain, will show you where you are set to work, and what you have to remove out of your heart in order to bring it nearer to the likeness of the divine, nearer to the perfect love. And as you proceed, day by day, detaching yourself more and more from the inward selfishness, the love that is selfless will gradually become revealed to you. And when you are growing patient and calm, when your petulances, tempers, and irritabilities are passing away from you, and the more powerful lusts and prejudices cease to dominate and enslave you, then you will know that the divine is awakening within you, that you are drawing near to the eternal heart, that you are not far from that selfless love, the possession of which is peace and immortality. Divine love is distinguished from human loves in this supremely important particular. It is free from partiality. Human loves cling to a particular object to the exclusion of all else, and when that object is removed, great and deep is the resultant suffering to the one who loves. Divine love embraces the whole universe, and, without clinging to any part, yet contains within itself the whole, and he who comes to it by gradually purifying and broadening his human loves until all the selfishness and impure elements are burnt out of them, ceases from suffering. It is because human loves are narrow and confined and mingled with selfishness that they cause suffering. No suffering can result from that love which is so absolutely pure that it seeks nothing for itself. Nevertheless, human loves are absolutely necessary as steps toward the divine, and no soul is prepared to partake of divine love until it has become capable of the deepest and most intense human love. It is only by passing through human loves and human sufferings that divine love is reached and realized. All human loves are perishable, like the forms to which they cling, but there is a love that is imperishable, and that does not cling to appearances. All human loves are counterbalanced by human hates, but there is a love that admits of no opposite or reaction, divine and free from all taint of self, that sheds its fragrance on all alike. Human loves are reflections of the divine love, and draw the soul nearer to the reality, the love that knows neither sorrow nor change. It is well that the mother, clinging with passionate tenderness to the little helpless form of flesh that lies on her bosom, shall be overwhelmed with the dark waters of sorrow when she sees it laid in the cold earth. It is well that her tears should flow and her heart ache, for only thus can she be reminded of the evanescent nature of the joys and objects of sense, and be drawn nearer to the eternal and imperishable reality. It is well that lover, brother, sister, husband, wife, should suffer deep anguish and be enveloped in gloom when the visible object of their affections is torn from them, so that they may learn to turn their affections toward the invisible source of all, where alone abiding satisfaction is to be found. It is well that the proud, the ambitious, the self-seeking should suffer defeat, humiliation, and misfortune, that they should pass through the scorching fires of affliction, for only thus can the wayward soul be brought to reflect upon the enigma of life. Only thus can the heart be softened and purified and prepared to receive the truth. When the sting of anguish penetrates the heart of human love, when gloom and loneliness and desertion cloud the soul of friendship and trust, then it is that the heart turns toward the sheltering love of the eternal and finds rest in its silent peace. And whosoever comes to this love is not turned away comfortless, is not pierced with anguish, nor surrounded with gloom, and is never deserted in the dark hour of trial. The glory of divine love can only be revealed in the heart that is chastened by sorrow, and the image of the heavenly state can only be perceived and realized when the lifeless, formless accretions of ignorance and self are hewn away. Only that love that seeks no personal gratification or reward, that does not make distinctions, and that leaves behind no heartaches, can be called divine. Men clinging to self and to the comfortless shadows of evil are in the habit of thinking of divine love as something belonging to a God who is out of reach, as something outside themselves, and that must forever remain outside. Truly, the love of God is ever beyond the reach of self. When the heart and mind are emptied of self, then the selfless love, the supreme love, the love that is God or good, becomes an inward and abiding reality. And this inward realization of holy love is none other than the love of Christ that is so much talked about and so little comprehended. The love that not only saves the soul from sin, but lifts it also above the power of temptation. But how may one attain to this sublime realization? The answer which truth has always given and will ever give to this question is, empty thyself, and I will fill thee. Divine love cannot be known until self is dead, for self is the denial of love, and how can that which is known be also denied? Not until the stone of self is rolled away from the sepulchre of the soul does the immortal Christ, the pure spirit of love, hitherto crucified, dead, and buried, cast off the bands of ignorance and come forth in all the majesty of his resurrection. You believe that the Christ of Nazareth was put to death and rose again. I do not say you err in that belief, but if you refuse to believe that the gentle spirit of love is crucified daily upon the dark cross of your selfish desires, then I say you err in this unbelief, and have not yet perceived, even afar off, the love of Christ. You say that you have tasted of salvation in the love of Christ. Are you saved from your temper, your irritability, your vanity, your personal dislikes, your judgment and condemnation of others? If not, from what are you saved, and wherein have you realized the transforming love of Christ? He who has realized the love that is divine has become a new man, and has ceased to be swayed and dominated by the old elements of self. He is known for his patience, his purity, his self-control, his deep charity of heart, and his unalterable sweetness. Divine or selfless love is not a mere sentiment or emotion. It is a state of knowledge which destroys the dominion of evil and the belief